This is for professional and institutional clients only.
With funding markets open, with capital markets open, and good performance through the sector, I think we're generally optimistic about opportunities in 2024 and beyond.
Welcome to the Ignio Infrastructure Partners podcast, Keeping It Real Assets. In this series, you will hear from the Ignio investment team in conversation with the leaders of our global infrastructure businesses. We will shine a light on how they operate and their approach to the challenges of an ever-changing world. We hope that you enjoy listening.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Keeping It Real Assets. My name is Bashar Biyani, Regional Managing Director Americas at First Sentier Investors. I'm pleased to welcome Michael Ryder and John Maher, co-heads of North America at Ignio. Today we're going to discuss the North American mid-market. Could I ask you to firstly introduce yourself?
Thanks, Bashar. I'm John Maher, and co-head together with Michael of the Ignio Infrastructure Partners investment team in North America. I've been with the business since late 2018, so a little over 5 years. I began my infrastructure career as a banker at Goldman Sachs, where I was for approximately 13 years. When I left Goldman Sachs in 2011, I actually took a role in government. I was the chief of staff of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which is a bi-state regional transportation infrastructure agency here in the New York, New Jersey region, which oversees the airports, the ports, the tolled bridge and tunnel crossings, as well as the PATH commuter rail system.
I joined Ignio as co-head of Americas with John in 2022 after almost a 30-year career in investing and advisory. Immediately prior to Ignio, I was working with OMERS Infrastructure, one of the large Canadian pension plans. And before that, I was a partner at Blackstone Energy Partners. And then prior to that, spent 14 years at Morgan Stanley.
We're going to start off with a little bit of basics. Over time, we've seen some evolution in the definition of infrastructure. What does infrastructure mean to Ignio?
So we're traditionalists when it comes to how we define infrastructure. We like to focus on asset-based businesses that largely have high barriers to entry and provide an essential service. The sectors we tend to focus on include energy transition, transport and logistics, digital infrastructure, and water and waste.
Ignio has been investing in infrastructure for around 30 years globally. What are some of the characteristics of the North American infrastructure market, and how does that compare to other major markets?
One of the things that sometimes surprises people who are less familiar with the North American market is just how fragmented the market is over here and how large a middle market opportunity exists in this region. The U.S. certainly has some very large cap companies that have a national presence and national scale, but there's 50 states and hundreds of meaningful sized cities, municipalities, each with its own set of regulations and codes. So federal policies, of course, super important, but there's a lot of meaningful variations at the local and municipal level. And so that's led to a lot of fragmentation in the marketplace over here. We've invested in terrific businesses with great regional franchises or specific local market focuses. So for example, US Signal, a fiber and data center business. It's based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and focused on the upper Midwest region of the US, primarily in tier two and tier three city markets. Or more recently, Insoltage, which is a distributed generation business whose business model is really tailored to state-level renewable power incentives and is currently operating in 14 states across the US. Those are just a couple of examples of what we think is a very mid-market-oriented market broadly here in the US. Michael and I were actually just with a European colleague last week and explaining how things like minimum wage and labor codes varied, not just from state to state, but in certain instances within specific cities within those states. He found that somewhat surprising. That state and local variation applies to building codes, environmental regulations, local incentives for things like renewable power generation, you name it. So again, all that leads to local and regional fragmentation in many sectors of companies in infrastructure markets here. The other thing that I'd note is that unlike several other countries in like Australia, the UK, and Europe, the level of infrastructure privatization in the US is low. And so the level of disinvestment in those sectors is quite high. The transportation and water sectors particularly come to mind in the US. At my time at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, we began a big drive to upgrade and renovate our regional airports, starting with LaGuardia and now more recently at JFK. As part of that redevelopment program, we benchmarked airports around the world and the quality and the level of investment, not always linked to private investment, but basically overseas, the airports are notably better quality than here in the US. And that's, again, I think a byproduct of how a lot of transportation infrastructure is just regionalized at the local level and has a lack of funding. This goes fundamentally to our mid-market focus. We think there's just great opportunities if you have the network and really take the time to drill down into businesses that have great positions in their local and regional markets or in very specific niches within some industry infrastructure subsectors.
Can you help us understand what part of the market this represents and what part of the middle market you're most excited about right now?
In infrastructure today, investors tend to define the middle market as transactions between 100 million and anywhere up to 750 million to $1 billion in equity value. That's a pretty broad range. At 500 to $750 million-ish, you would broadly consider that the upper end of the middle market for core infrastructure, at least. And at 100 to say $250 million of equity value, I think most would consider that the lower end of the middle market. We're seeing interesting opportunities across that range from the lower end to the upper end of the middle market. We've seen the market change a lot over the past decade. A number of funds now have transitioned into large cap or mega cap space, targeting $5 billion, $10 billion, or even $20 billion plus funds. As a result, the competition in the middle market has really reduced, and we're seeing much less competition as we go out and look for opportunities, particularly in the lower middle market area.
It's not just about taking advantage of lower competition to make investments and enter investments on attractive terms. We also think it's just a great opportunity to drive value through active asset management. A lot of these middle market companies and investments, we think there's just an enormous number of levers to pull to create value. The macro environment's been challenging for asset owners to navigate the last couple of years between the pandemic and higher interest rates and higher inflation. And there's a lot of smaller and middle-sized businesses, sometimes privately held by individuals or families, that had a hard time accessing capital to fund their business plan or fund growth opportunities. And they're seeking capital partners. And we can create value in these businesses by just institutionalizing them, putting in place good processes and procedures to help drive that growth.
Within North America, what do you see as the most attractive sectors for investors? And why would you say that?
You know, touching on renewables and energy transition, there's a lot of tailwinds that continue to drive a lot of development, a lot of activity in the sector. There's obviously just a huge amount of policy support for energy transition, starting at the federal level, but as I noted before, down at the state and local level as well. And just tremendous underlying demand for reliable green power. The higher interest rate environment is making projects more expensive, and there's supply chain constraints impacting the renewable sector in the US, I think as it is elsewhere around the world. But the Inflation Reduction Act that passed back in late 2022 is helping offset some of that, contributing to just growth in the sector. So underlying that, we do continue to find the energy transition and renewable sector attractive for good assets and good companies. The other sector I note is transportation. So it is a very dynamic sector. We don't hear as much about transportation broadly in recent years. But since the pandemic, we've seen a lot of movement in the industry. There are lots of companies and parties out there still trying to recover from the nightmare of the supply chain constraints that they experienced during the peak of COVID and the pandemic and then the good part of 2022. No company wants to find themselves back in the position they found themselves back then, where everything was bottlenecked. They just couldn't get goods to market. So a lot of shippers want more reliable, more resilient supply chains. And so we're seeing demand for investment into transportation infrastructure and logistics. And then the other thing I would say in transportation is there's a broad, longer-term macro theme, which is a lot of players within the transportation infrastructure chain are looking to decarbonize their footprint. whether it's through renewable fuel projects, electric vehicle charging, or other similar projects.
You mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act. It's often talked about along with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. For those of the listeners that aren't familiar with these, can you tell us a little bit about them?
So the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which was passed in 2021, and the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed in 2022, together have provided incredible stimulus to investment in not only renewables, particularly from the Inflation Reduction Act, but also across transportation and other infrastructure spending, likely north of $2 trillion in total infrastructure incentives. So those two acts combined with the CHIPS Act have created very strong tailwinds for investing in infrastructure in North America.
And Bashar, back to your question of what the Infrastructure Jobs Act was designed to achieve. Well, in transportation infrastructure, as an example, again, the state of infrastructure in the U.S. I think is relatively poor. And a lot of the transportation infrastructure sits in public sector ownership and control. So airports and roads are almost exclusively controlled by local municipalities. And we don't see that changing in the near term. Basically, a lot of the 2021 Infrastructure Jobs Act money will flow to local governments. And it's really a way of distributing economic benefits, creating jobs and economic stimulus overall. But there are some niche sectors that we think benefits will flow to private entities and private investment or help incentivize private investment. So a good example is the freight rail sector, where we have an investment in a leading short line freight rail operator, Patriot Rail. In the freight rail sector, there was an existing federal grant program called the CRISI Grant Program. It's been around for a while. It was funded by the federal government at around $400 million a year. From the Infrastructure Jobs Act from 2021, the level of funding is more than tripled for the next several years. So there's a lot more grant money flowing from the federal government. It's a competitive grant program, so different companies and different projects, municipalities need to apply to win grant funding, but it's just opened up quite a significantly enhanced level of federal funding that goes directly into rail capital projects that industry participants can access. And that federal money often gets paired with individual state and local grant monies, which are also attractive because, you know, states and municipalities also like to see investment in job-creating infrastructure projects.
We are in election year, and obviously a change in administration might mean some potential rollbacks of some of these things. Are you worried about that in the context of the portfolio or generally the opportunity set you're seeing in the US?
So as you can imagine, we're watching this topic pretty closely. At a high level, infrastructure has been an area that both Republican and Democrat administrations have tended to like. They generate jobs, stimulate the economy, and obviously contribute to America's competitiveness in the global market, which, whether you're Republican, whether you're Democrat, tends to be a focus. It also tends to be something that is invested in the local market arena. And so for Congress people who see this benefit to their local markets and to their local constituents, it tends to be quite attractive.
Geopolitics are taking center stage. Inflation's been rising and central governments have been trying to rein that in. As a result, you have been seeing a lot of volatility in markets generally. Infrastructure seems to have held up relatively well. Why do you think that is? And what do you think the outlook is for the remainder of the year or so?
Infrastructure has proven to be quite resilient over the last several years through the high inflation environment, post-pandemic, and in a higher interest rate environment as well. In terms of the outlook of 2024, you mentioned a few things. The geopolitical environment is quite uncertain, tumultuous right now. In terms of debt markets, the debt markets are open and functional. So we've got higher base rates than 2 years ago, but a pretty positive outlook right now, at least here in the US, for a soft landing. And inflation is certainly much tamer than it was a couple of years ago. Again, with funding markets open, with capital markets open and good performance through the sector, I think we're generally optimistic about opportunities in 2024 and beyond. The one thing, though, that I would add that's specific to where we spend a lot of our time is in these lower middle market companies that we target and focus on. They've got more limited options for accessing debt markets. We come across a lot of businesses that don't have, I'd say, the right or appropriate capital structure, and they're often relying on regional banking relationships rather than kind of a more efficient syndicated or bank market or capital market. And so there's real opportunity with some of those businesses to help, again, institutionalize them. You'll hear us use that phrase, institutionalize those businesses. And part of that is helping them access more competitive debt markets. And that's part of our value creation approach and thesis.
Are you finding less competition?
So that's the great thing about the middle market for us. The infrastructure market in North America has matured over the past decade. A lot of funds have grown to the point now where they're not focused on transactions where they can deploy $100-200 million or up to $500 million. They're really looking for the much larger transactions. And as a result, the middle market has been neglected. And there are a huge number of business owners, founders, families who own a number of these businesses who honestly may have been considering opportunities to exit in the last couple of years and have deferred those plans. And so today we're actually seeing more of these companies come to market. And I think that'll create a really robust and interesting opportunity for people like us who continue to focus in this space, who have the capital to be able to invest in middle market companies.
There's often some concern around dry powder and that keeping valuations quite high. So given your comment just now, do you think that there's less dry powder focused on middle market? So from a valuation perspective, do you see it flowing through to being more attractive?
Yes, there's absolutely less dry powder focused on the middle market today. We did some analysis at the end of 2022. I think there was 6% of the dry powder in the North American market was in funds that were $1 billion or less. Whereas the number of deals was, you know, 60% of the deals are $250 million or less size deals from an equity check perspective, about 40% of the value. So if you look at it from a availability of capital versus opportunity to invest, there just is less competition in the space in the lower middle market and in the middle market. So we're seeing that play out in processes. We see that we're often in discussions with founders or business owners, and we may be the only people they're talking to, or they're talking to one other group. And as a result, we find that we can drive terms, that we can often enter investments on more attractive pricing and terms. And it's a really exciting place to be competing.
Infrastructure assets are very long term. How do you think about time horizons as it relates to both the acquisition case, but also the asset management?
You really need to think about business plans on a long-term basis. A lot of the capital investments we're making are really long-lived investments. So you've got to think beyond just the next couple of years cycle. That being said, one of the disciplines we're trying to put into our approach here is really thinking about, if we're acquiring a business, how do we exit it attractively within a certain time frame? That's not to say we necessarily will, but I think it creates real accountability around timeframes for achieving certain things in our long-term asset management plan.
Yeah, John, I think that's right. In fact, I'd even go a little further. So at the time of underwriting investments, we are putting in place our plans around what a successful exit would look like. And that can include looking at who the potential buyers could be and what characteristics the company needs to actually demonstrate and have in order for it to be attractive. And then on an annual basis, as we go through our annual business reviews, we're re-underwriting each of our portfolio companies and looking at, is this a company that we should continue to hold over the course of the next year? Or is this a company that we should be evaluating for exit? So it's a pretty proactive approach to thinking through whether we continue to be the best owner, or whether because of market conditions or appetite of potential buyers, it's now the right time for us to be thinking about monetizing the business in a way that's most advantageous for our clients.
I feel like today has been an illuminating discussion for many people, perhaps not as familiar with the North American infrastructure market. Perhaps to finish off, you could tell us a little bit about what you might be concerned about for the year, but also what you're most excited about for what 2024 has in store.
I guess as I look at 2024, and we talked about this a bit earlier, the federal presidential election here is bound to be a bit of a circus. And so from an investing standpoint, I think we need to look through. I remind myself that the Trump administration in 2016 actually was pushing a $1 trillion infrastructure investment bill. And of course, when the Biden administration came into the office, that we saw the passage, as we talked about, of the Infrastructure Jobs Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. So Michael's right, infrastructure is a very bipartisan area of commonality. But for 2024, as we look ahead, we're bound to see a lot of Twitter sphere activity and a lot of chaos. So strap yourself in.
I think coming back to the market, we've been through a 24-month period where inflation has spiked, interest rates have run up, and now we are seeing what looks like the wished-for and desired soft landing in the North American economy. Through that period, it's been great to see that infrastructure as an asset class has actually been quite resilient. It's performed well, and relative to some of the other private asset classes, I think it's held up value and it's continued to generate income. So 2024 to me is actually an opportunity for us to take advantage of what is a stabilizing and more secure outlook economy. And I think we're going to see a lot of transaction activity as we get into the year. People are more excited about interest rates, more excited about macro outlook, and notwithstanding the political overlay, which I do agree is perhaps the one threat or negative to this, I think we're going to see a lot of interest from sellers and buyers around affecting transactions and changing ownership in the infrastructure space. So it creates a lot of opportunity for us. We have a fantastic team in place. We're seeing a huge pipeline of opportunities, and we're excited for the coming year.
John, Michael, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Keeping It Real Assets, the Ignio Infrastructure Partners podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can listen to more by following Ignio Infrastructure Partners on your favorite podcast platform. If you'd like to find out more about Ignio Infrastructure Partners, you can visit our website at ignioip.com. This podcast series was produced by Mark Gardner at OX4 Sound Studio. This podcast is not a financial promotion and has been prepared for general information purposes only. It is not intended to be investment or financial advice and does not take into account the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. References to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell such securities. Investment vehicles managed by Ignio Infrastructure Partners are only available to institutional investors, professional investors, qualified investors, and wholesale clients. They are not available to retail clients, the general public, private customers, or any persons in any jurisdiction in which their distribution is not authorized. Ignio Infrastructure Partners is an unlisted infrastructure asset management business and is part of the First Sentier Investors Group. We communicate and conduct business through different legal entities in different locations. Please refer to the notes section of the podcast platform you use for more information on Ignio Infrastructure Partners in your region. For Singapore only, the podcast should be used in accordance with the applicable laws in Singapore. In Singapore, the podcast is issued by First Sentier Investors Singapore, whose company registration number is 19690042D. This advertisement or material has not been reviewed by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. First Sentier Investors registration number 53236800B and Ignio Infrastructure Partners registration number 53447928J are business divisions of First Sentier Investors Singapore.